Greetings, everybody. It's time for some Monday afternoon market commentary. I had mentioned in the Friday long form episode with my discussion with Tony Greer that we were going to be talking with Daily Dirt Nap writer Jared Dillian. He put out a piece midweek last week, I believe it was Wednesday, and he said this is the most important issue of the Daily Dirt Nap of this year, but perhaps for several years. And so on the podcast with us today is the one and own Jared Dillian, the Daily Dirt Nap. Jared, how are you, my friend?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Listen, when you get, you know, I'm an easy one to sway, obviously, because I'm biased on precious metals. But when you get somebody like Tony Greer put back in his seat and lighting a fire under his butt to get into precious metals, you know you did something right. This was a very meaningful piece.
Yeah, he's generally, I would say more often than not, he's skeptical on gold. Tommy Thornton is too. I've never seen Tommy Thornton long gold. He's either short or he's flat, but he's never long. So
he's long GDX right now.
Is he really? Okay, yeah. That's a first.
So yeah. I'm sorry to give away everybody's trade ideas. but no, this is interesting. Listen, I really kind of want to get into the ethos of this, what you were seeing leading up to a one pager. Usually when you write a newsletter, it's 2 to 3 pages. This was short, sweet, powerful, to the point. And actually, you basically called the bottom. You published this thing, and then all of a sudden, gold rip roared from about 1625. Here we are, $1,700 on the gold price over the last 4 days. Pretty meaningful news. What was it about the timing? What were you seeing that made you really publish this?
All right. Well, first of all, you know, I just to point out that I was long. You know, I mean, I've been long for 17 years, and I just want to go over like this history of mistakes that I made, right? So if you go back 8 months ago, we had that wedge pattern. We broke out from the wedge on the Ukraine war. It was at about 1820. I bought and bought and bought, and I built this huge position, and I was like limit long at 2060, and then it just collapsed. And I kind of like snuck out of most of that position, but I was still wearing about a quarter of it as gold got down into the 1600s. And I just, you know, I'm a sentiment guy. So I was observing that sentiment was just getting worse and worse and worse and worse. So what happened was, obviously you had that meltdown with gilt in the UK. Basically the back end of the yield curve came totally unglued in the UK, and they had a risk of their pension funds becoming insolvent. So they had to step in and save the bond market. And it's not QE. So a lot of people call it QE. It's not QE. Really what it is debt monetization. Like, this was my thesis back in 2008. Okay. When we first started doing QE, I said, here's what's going to happen. We're going to do QE. We're going to increase the money supply. It's going to cause inflation. Inflation is going to cause bond yields to scream higher. And then we're going to be in a situation where our interest expense is too large and we can't allow interest rates to go up anymore. So we're going to cap yields. We're going to do yield curve control and basically monetize an unlimited amount of debt. And that's the point at which inflation goes parabolic and gold goes parabolic. So that was, I used to, back in 2008, 2009, I used to write about this all the time. And I was young and inexperienced. I was about 34, 35 years old. And what I didn't understand is that, you know, really a big macro idea like this takes a really, really long time to play out. You know, so you had this whole period of time in between where we had this deflationary period and bond yields went down and the trade didn't work. But that was the thesis in 2008. But when the Bank of England came in to cap bond yields, this is the beginning of the end game. You know, this is yield curve control. I mean, this is where governments have to step in and prevent interest rates from going higher. And how they do that is they print money to buy an unlimited amount of bonds at a certain interest rate. They're capping interest rates. And that makes gold go parabolic. So, you know, when I saw them do that, that's when I wrote that one pager. It took me like 20 minutes. I sent it out. And that was the low in gold. You know, and I think it is going to be the low for a long time. If I don't know if we're ever going to see that price again.
You publish every day and lots of content But to do this in 20 minutes with such a, I don't know, powerful cult reading, cult following. I don't know if that's fair to say, but just really meaningful move following this. I mean, did it surprise you that it would garner so much attention, or did you know it was going to come?
I guess I knew, but I didn't, you know, here's one thing. Like I'm very protective about my content. And, you know, when people sign up for the newsletter, they sign an agreement that says they can't forward it ever without permission from me. And most people adhere to that. And I, you know, so people do occasionally ask me for permission to forward. And I got like dozens of people asking for permission to forward. I'm like, you know what? Just send it out. I don't care. Just send it out and, you know, have everybody read it and maybe they'll want to subscribe. So,
okay. Well, I think it's important to note the timeline here. Listen, if you talk to a majority of those traditional gold bugs, silver bugs, whatever, they think that everything should have been solvent yesterday. And they've been saying that for decades and decades now. But you're talking about this is a long time frame, and you have a 8-step process here. We are just started step 5, according to the process. Step 6 is inflation goes parabolic, according to what you wrote up. What is that timeline like? Because obviously we know inflation can move quickly, but it's not like it's everything's going to go belly up tomorrow.
No, I mean, really, the best way I can characterize the inflation that we have right now is that all the quantitative easing that we did over the course of like 10 years was like dry kindling, and the fiscal response to the pandemic is what really lit the spark and started the fire. So, you know, more QE is going to feed into inflation, but over a long period of time. So when I say we're at step 5, like step 6, inflation really going parabolic might not happen for 3 to 5 years, right? Like, So, you know, this whole process could take another 10, 15 years to play out. But I think I'm comfortable saying that, you know, the lows that we just had in gold in the low 1600s, like I think those are going to be pretty much the ding dong lows for a long time, you know.
Boy, that'd be something. That would be something. It was interesting because I had put out a little bit of a forecast for gold, and basically it was the day before the announcement for the Bank of England, and gold looked terrible. I actually thought we could bounce a little bit and then find another low down to about 1500, 1450. But that decision by the Bank of England was the catalyst to get this thing up and going again. I guess my follow-up question, Jared, is, you know, was this just stage one of central banks beginning to pivot?
Yes, for sure. Yeah, 100%. I mean, look, like it's just, there's a lot of people out there that's, I mean, I think Mark Mobius said the Fed is going to hike to 9%. That's lunacy. It's not going to happen. You know, I had always said that the Fed was going to hike until something broke. And what broke was the UK. Like they broke the country. And they could also break Credit Suisse, right? So they could also break that. But we've raised rates high enough and fast enough that shit is starting to blow up, you know. So nowhere in their mandate does it say financial stability is part of their mandate. It says full employment and low inflation, and those are their two mandates. It doesn't say financial stability. But if they blow up the financial system because they raise rates too fast, there's really nothing left to save. So it's just like common sense just takes over. And you know, we were pricing in another 125 basis points of rate hikes plus. I don't think we're going to get anything close to that. I think we'll probably get 50 basis points in November, and then the data is going to start to crap out. And I don't even think we'll get a rate hike in December. So I think we have 50 more basis points, and that's it. That's my prediction.
Do you feel like they're already late to the pivot? And if they are, what's broken here on our soil?
Actually, you know, in the U.S., I would say the thing that's closest to breaking is the housing market. You know, the average mortgage payment is up about 80%. Prices haven't resolved to the downside yet. I mean, it's not so much about the magnitude of the rate hikes; it's the speed. I saw a chart earlier today that showed that this is the fastest rate hikes that the Fed has ever done in any rate hiking cycle that they've done in their history. This is the fastest. And the speed is what's really the problem. Like, they haven't allowed things to adjust. So just common sense dictates, you know, pause and, you know, wait for the rate hikes to feed into the system and then thinking about maybe doing some more later. You know, you have some, you have a couple people on the Fed who are just nut jobs. Like Kashgari went from being the most dovish guy in the Fed, zero rates forever, negative rates. And now he's the exact opposite. He wants to hike to 10%. I call him the idiot in the shower. You know, water's too hot, water's too cold, water's too hot, water's too cold. You know, this is it, like, it basically, it, like, we have a volatile Fed. You know, like, we have this volatility of Fed funds, which is too high, and it's increasing the amplitude of the business cycle. We had a really, really big boom. We have the potential for a really, really big bust. It didn't have to be that way. You know, instead of this big amplitude, we could have had something like this, you know?
Yeah, he's definitely a corporate man. He's a company guy.
Yeah, for sure. He wants to be Fed chair.
Oh, boy. That's hard to fathom, Jared. I mean, we've already lost a little credibility. It just doesn't sound like we're going to regain it anymore with that, and with all due respect to him. But it's interesting, I guess, do you think they're talking about something similar that the BOE did with this yield curve control? How far away is the United States Federal Reserve for making such a move? Because our bond market is definitely wreaking havoc on globally here. And you mentioned the housing market. I mean, I saw a statistic that basically your purchasing power for a new home just got cut in half over the last few months.
Yeah.
Which is,
I mean, I think it's, how high would rates have to get? They would have to get quite a bit higher than they are right now. Maybe 6 or 7% in tens, something like that. And it would have to get there fast. So I don't see that happening anytime in the near future. The thing to remember about the treasury market is that, you know, the treasury market used to have sort of this support because you had the Fed buying bonds, you had China buying bonds, you had Japan buying bonds, you had the whole rest of the world buying bonds, you had US investors buying bonds. And like, now none of that exists. Like, US investors aren't buying bonds, foreign countries aren't buying bonds, the Fed isn't buying. Not only is the Fed not buying, they're selling, they're doing QT. So the treasury market is completely one way. It has no bid. And that's the problem. So I think the market pulled back from a point where, I mean, you know, tens basically got to 4% to the tick and rallied. So I think we pulled back from the brink.
Is there a demand on the retail side for bonds from here? Or do you see, well, that? Like, if you're managing your retirement fund,
there is in the front end of the curve. Sure. I mean, what we've seen in the last month is that you have people buying bills and two-year notes, mostly bills, like going into Treasury Direct, buying bills, or doing it on their brokers. Like, you know, I talked to my broker. He's like, yeah, all I do now is trade T-bills. Like, I don't even trade stocks anymore. I just trade T-bills. So at some point you get yields up to a point and it does start to look attractive. And, you know, the more it goes up, the more attractive it will look. So,
yeah, yeah. I got to ask you here, and I don't know if you're prepared to answer it. If not, totally fine. But I got to ask you about this move in silver on the back of the gold move. I mean, right now, gold continues to move as we speak, 1705 front month futures basis. That's a 2% move on the day, back over 1700. Nice to see. But silver is up 8.5% today, Jared, to $20.68 an ounce. You know, I know you're more of a gold guy, but do you have any general thoughts about this piggyback with its cousin silver?
Well, I mean, the one thing I'll say about silver just in general terms is that silver is a right tail asset, right? Silver doesn't really crash, but it explodes higher. Like, if you look at the distribution of silver, it has a very big fat right tail, and you know, if you think about silver going back to the 1970s, we've had two trips up to 50, but most of the time it's around 10 or 15 bucks an ounce. And silver has the ability to explode higher. So, you know, if you were to buy upside calls in SLV or call spreads would probably be better. That would be a good way to play it. You know, it's funny because I have some silver coins and I have American Eagles and Maples. And I had one of my Eagles and I was holding it up and looking at it. First of all, it's the most beautiful coin. Like the Silver Eagle is the most beautiful coin that the Mint makes. Like it's absolutely fantastic. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, all right, so take mining the silver, taking it out of the ground, refining it, minting it into a coin, shipping it to a dealer, shipping it to me, and this is 18 bucks. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that is mispriced. It's absolutely mispriced. And by the way, 18 bucks, it's essentially where it was in 2010. Like the price hasn't changed in 12 years with all this inflation that we've had. It's very, very underpriced. So,
I don't know if you've paid attention, but the premiums from the bullion dealers have just gone through the roof over the last couple of years. I mean, you're talking anywhere from 40 to 80% premium just on that, just off the spot price.
Yeah. When I was buying it, it was like a 10 or 15% premium.
Yeah. It's been unreal the last couple of years. Jared, I'll give you the last word here. I mean, incredible moves in precious metals, incredible call on your part. As we move through this week, you know, what are something you're really paying attention to in response to all this?
What am I paying attention to? I am looking for comments out of the Fed that indicate that we might pivot. And we've seen a couple indicating that the Fed is monitoring financial stability. That's code. Right. That's code for saying we're thinking about pausing the rate hikes. They're not explicitly saying it, but they're kind of saying it. So I'm sort of parsing their comments and just looking for clues that they might actually pivot. A lot of people have said to me, like, well, I'm not going to buy stocks until the Fed pivots. And I'm like, well, you dummy. Like, if you wait until they actually pivot, you're going to miss the first half of the move. You know what I mean? And that's what we're seeing today. Like, you know, I think, you know, we're in a huge squeeze in stocks and we're going to squeeze for the next couple of weeks. And by the time that we actually get a comment out of the Fed saying that they're pausing the rate hikes or hiking less, that like we'll be 2/3 of the move will be over. So.
All right. One to watch. Everything rallied today. In fact, the dollar's the only thing really red on my screen. It's only down 0.25%. So. I mean, that's a fairly decent move in the Dixie, but it's not much of a move compared to the rest of the market. Jared, thanks so much for your time. Excellent piece. Everybody, I highly recommend it. The Daily Dirt Nap. It's a great read every morning. It's about the fourth or fifth thing I do in my morning is read Jared's note. But thanks so much for your time, buddy. And stay safe, stay dry, and be well down there.
Thank you.
The information presented should not be considered investment advice. Mining Stock Daily and its affiliates are not responsible for any loss arising from any investment decision in connection with the material presented herein. Please do your own research or speak with a licensed financial representative before making any investment decisions.